B-Pod Studios.
This is the home of the Bruins, the Celtics, and these guys, Toucher and Rich, on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Starting at 5, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Watch us on twitch.tv, subscribe to 98.5, the Sports Hub. Get your 98.5, the Sports Hub app at your app store. Give us a call at 617-779-0985. The Pfizer vaccinations in Israel cut COVID infections by half after just the first shot.
Very nice. Yeah, I've heard that something upwards of like 80% protection just from the first one. So
let's start popping them in arms. John says, he goes, Biden has a crazy plan. I'm not making fun of you, Johnny, but John says he's got this plan. He says 100 million shots in 100 days. I said, that's should be a minimum.
I would agree, but the rollout has been a lot smaller than that, so it seems ambitious.
Also, they have been holding back vaccine as well because of the second shot thing. I agree, too. But, I mean, listen, I have a feeling that very soon things are going to be better. If not, I mean, they may not be 100 million shots in 100 days.
That's so easy. Ambitious. Across the entire country? Give me a break.
You got to have people trained to give the shots. You
well, I'm hearing
the infrastructure set up to
now
do
I
it.
Am hearing that training to give the shots is easy. And I've heard that by a bunch of people.
The training might be easy.
It's like it's literally like 15 minutes, if that.
Okay, but you also have to set up places to do this and to get these people trained. I'm with you, but I mean that's why it's taking a little bit. And it shouldn't. This is all.
Put a small room aside. It can be a closet as long as it has a chair, right?
Yeah, I mean, give them to Walgreens.
Yep, you need.
I'd want the foot traffic.
See, a lot of the people, though, that are supposed to be giving the shots are busy right now fighting COVID in the hospital.
Well, those are overqualified to give the shots then. Pharmacists can give shots. Double up on the and train your staff at CVS to give the shots.
Oh, I don't know why they're not doing it at pharmacies yet. Like, that's crazy. Like, you've got people available there who can do it. I mean, they're the
ones. Well, if there's someone who's dealing with people that are going to die, I think their time is better spent not giving shots. And having someone who was doing something that requires 15 minutes of training, again, if that, to have people of a lesser pay grade doing the work of giving the shots.
Yeah, this is all stuff that could have been predicted and set up.
They only had a year to get it.
I know. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do is complain. Because that's all you can do is you complain.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm talking, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do to fix this?
Here's what I would do. If I am CVS, I would go every one of our branches. So I'm talking about, 20,000 branches? You are all going to train today. You're going to train 50 people to give the shots. And then I would have the 50 people come in. I would even give it myself an hour to get everyone seated and everything. I would spend the hour training them. And then I would say, we are open for business. That's what I would do.
Bert actually knows more about that than all of us because his wife does that. Like, I mean, she's into all that. So,
yeah, she's into
she got the vaccine as well. I mean, she lives in that world. So I don't even know
what
kind of training and certification it takes.
Oh,
but
it takes nothing.
You know, but there apparently aren't enough people to do it already.
Well,
so there's
not enough people. If they're looking for jobs, unemployment's up a ton. Get people sticking shots in arms. All right, Bert from MMQB is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist, which has a lot more to do than you think. It's not just a title. For the MMQB, he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Bert Breer, hello.
Apparently you guys are under the false impression that I have any idea.
I was not. I was not going to even ask you anything about it. Because I know
more than us because his wife's in the
middle. I don't know. My wife was in marketing. I don't know anything about marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, it's the whole thing accelerated really, really fast with Emily. Like, I know they had a bunch of stuff ready to go, which I think, like, if you look at it, like, going forward, it at least can give you a feeling of optimism that they are going to have a plan for the general public. Because I'm telling you, this thing was, you know, the vaccine was approved And it couldn't have been more than like 48 hours before Emily had an email in her inbox saying, like, we're going to set you up for the vaccine and we're going to have it to you within a couple of weeks. So it was really, really, really fast.
Here's
so
I assume
they have a similar plan for the general public.
Here's what I see. Remember when Trading Places at the end, when Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murray decide to start selling in the commodities market?
Mm-hmm.
And they're standing there and everyone crowds them going frantically, they want to buy. And Dan Aykroyd's like frantically writing out tickets and Eddie Murphy's slowly pointing to people. That's what it seems like to me. Like, oh, we got like 5 billion vaccines. You get one. And then, no.
I know. Well, that's why having a place like Gillette that will eventually, well, I know we laugh.
I know Gillette's going to mean everything. You have got a boner for Gillette that
well,
won't quit.
Well, any place that can put out 5,000 a day is huge. Need more places like that.
We'll see. Being able to,
they're doing 300 soon.
I mean, I think all the NFL teams, I think it's 30 NFL stadiums could wind up being used for this. And it's important because it's big space. It's a lot of parking. It's like all this stuff that you need to cycle people in and out really, really quick. Like, a football stadium is actually perfect for that, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I think that this is, again, like, I guess, like, end of March, right, is what they're saying for, like, the general public to start getting it. Like, I have to think, again, like, how organized they were and how fast it happened with Emily and how fast it happened with, you know, everybody in that community. I have to think they've got some sort of plan that mirrors that for the general public.
All right. Well, it's been a month, and they only given out, like, 11 million shots. They ain't going so great. All right, but one thing that is getting done, Mr. Breer, is a man close to your heart, I would imagine. A man who, his track record of Florida is really something to look at. He had 41 players arrested either while they were playing for him or, like, right after they played for him. 41 out of, like... Like,
yeah,
less than 200.
Yeah, just leader less of men.
Oh, yeah, like murders and all kinds of stuff.
Convicted murderers.
Oh, yeah. They're murdering all over the place. They were doing everything. I mean, I'll ask you this. So Urban Meyer is going to coach Jacksonville.
Yep.
Is Urban Meyer a bad guy? Like, how does that happen? How do you get... Because I would think if you took a group of guys, mm-hmm. 41 out of 150 would not be criminals, matter what you did. It has to be, like, almost a breeding ground for criminals at that point.
I think what happened was the pressure of coaching the SEC got to him, and he threw, like, any sort of principle as far as who he was going to recruit out the window. And I remember talking to one of his – and, Fred, I think this will resonate with you.
Yeah.
Because you lived in Florida. Like, I had somebody who worked for Urban at Ohio State explain this to me, and he said, you know, if you're at the University of Texas or you're at Ohio State, like, you can recruit out of the top 20 high school players in the state, and there might be, like, two or three bad seeds, but for the most part, you can kind of navigate around that. He's like, when you're recruiting in Florida, if you're at Florida or Florida State or Miami, it's like, 10 or 12 of those guys might be bad dudes. And if you don't recruit them, the other two schools are going to. And so there's, like, this dynamic in that state where I think the idea of, like, how do I compete in the SEC? How do I keep up with the other schools in Florida? Like, all of that really got to him. And he sort of threw caution to the wind and said, I just need to cut corners and recruit every like elite athlete I possibly can. And I mean, we've seen this in the NFL. I mean, not like to the criminal level, but we've seen this in the NFL too, where people just forget about team building and just try to, like, throw every great player they can on a roster and it doesn't work. It was like that. Plus you had, like, this element of just throwing any sort of principle as far as what they were going to look for character wise out the window. And I do think if you look at, like, what happened at Ohio State, like, as far as the players go, most of the guys who went through there, like, were pretty decent kids. There are exceptions, but it wasn't like it was at Florida. And so I think a lot of it kind of boiled down to the pressure of coaching in the SEC getting to him. And obviously you saw that at the end, the way he, you know, physically broke down at Florida.
So I mean, this is, it's obviously perfect, you know, for Jacksonville. He's got a built-in fan base mm-hmm. there already. You know, he's got Trevor Lawrence more than likely showing up. But I mean, it's so weird too, because I thought that was going to be like one of the best gigs, and then you had Shad Khan, the owner, come out and say that he's going to have a say in what kind of personnel moves are made.
Yeah,
and
it's not
a say, the say.
The say, right. It's like you can't get out of your own way. Like, you had laid out in front of you the most attractive job, and then you do that. And I mean, is there any chance of success with that formula? Trevor Lawrence showing up, you got the Urban Meyer and that owner in that city.
Yeah, I think there. I actually think Urban's what they need, because they've lacked an organizational identity forever. I've heard the culture in that building and just kind of like the work ethic in that building has been a problem. I think Tom Coughlin made some progress, but there's been sort of this 9-to-5 culture in that building that needs to be eradicated. And so I just think that there's, you know, like Buffalo was this way before Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean got there, where the place needs to just be brought down to the studs, you know, and you don't need an X's and O's guy, like an offensive guru or a defensive guru, so much as you need somebody who knows how to build a program and who knows how to kind of lay a foundation. And that's what Urban is, more than like an offensive coach. And I know that's how he made his bones initially. Urban's a program builder. And so that's what they need more than anything else. And I don't know if it's going to work, but I do think that it's at least a decent sign that Shad and other people in that building have recognized what the issue is, because the issue is systemic. It's not like, oh, well, we just had a bad play caller or we had a bad strength coach. It's way, way, way deeper than that. And so I think Urban going in there is exactly what they need. Again, I don't know if it's going to work, but I think that like the idea of like what type of coach he is, like, I think they actually nailed that part of it.
All right. So we will be back. It turns out there was the most attractive job in coaching, and we found out what that was yesterday. No, I mean, it's serious. I mean, that was the guy everyone wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back in just a moment with more of Burt Breer.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I got you stuck off the realness. We be the infamous, you heard of us. Official Queensbridge murderers. The mob comes equipped.
98.5, The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Burt Breer from MMQB is on with us. All right, the Jets have hired a new coach, Robert. What is it, Saleh or Saleh?
Saleh. Or is it Saleh?
Yeah, okay. Saleh, yeah.
All right, okay, so Saleh. Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator from San Francisco. He had interviewed with all the teams, basically, and he was. They let him leave the building, and then they called him, and now he's their new coach. What do you know about him?
He's fantastic. And, Fred, you really like him, because I think, like, he's incredibly competent, first and foremost as a defensive coach, but he's just somebody like people want to be around him. You know what I mean? Like, and you can see it, like the reaction from his players when, you know, when he got the job. And if you can go through Twitter and you can find it, Richard Sherman, guys who played for him, there in San Francisco, all think the world of him. They all buy into the way he coaches. They all believe that they have, you know, an edge schematically because they play for him. And on top of just getting him, you're also bringing the Kyle Shanahan system with him, because Mike LaFleur, Matt LaFleur's little brother, is going to be the Jets offensive coordinator now. So the combination of getting a leader like Saleh, you know, good defensive mind, so you have that part of it, and you're bringing in Kyle Shanahan's system, I think that makes this a really good all-around hire. And I think it's going to give you the best chance now to evaluate the quarterback position in a system that I think is on the cutting edge of the NFL. And so they're going to look at Sam Darnold now in the context of that Kyle Shanahan system, make a decision on him. and then decide what they want to do with the second overall pick as it relates to that.
Yeah, all right. So, obviously, I know nothing about any of this. I'm just reading what has been written. They say that this is a play-action system, and this suits Sam Darnold's, you know, his strengths. But Sam Darnold sucked when he played San Francisco. But the new coach, Saleh, has said that he likes Sam Darnold. What is your read on this situation?
Yeah, I know. So I know that Kyle and San Francisco liked Sam Darnold to the point where, like, I had them sort of marked as a potential suitor if Sam Darnold becomes available. So I think the question now for the Jets becomes, and I think they have to approach, like, the at least the next 2 months, right, before you get to the start of free agency, because that's when you'd move a veteran quarterback if you're going to move him. I think they have to approach the next 2 months as if they don't have a quarterback, right, or as if Sam Darnold is in the draft class, put it that way. And I think they have to go through all of the paces as they normally would if they didn't have a quarterback on Zach Wilson, and do the same thing with Justin Fields, and do the same thing with Trey Lance, and hold them all up against Sam Darnold, and then make a decision that way. But I can tell you that the Niners liked Sam Darnold, again, to the point where my radar was up for, you know, if Jimmy Garoppolo was going to become available, the Niners were like the Sam Darnold, I felt like was one of the quarterbacks that maybe could make them move off of Jimmy Garoppolo. So, I'd imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I'd imagine Mike LaFleur probably has similar feelings for Sam Darnold, just because, you know, he learned the offense from Kyle Shanahan, and he was sitting in, you know, those meeting rooms with Kyle Shanahan over the last 3 years.
Did you see the back page of the New York Post, by the way, Fred or Bert? Robert Saleh looks a lot like Mr. Clean.
Oh, that's and right. Yeah, I saw that.
It says, gang hire 49ers coordinator to be all-purpose cleaner, Mr. Green. It has
not bad.
He's also very hunky. Well, the Daily News outdoes them and just has James Harden on the cover, and it says, pop-up ad, which is everything that comes up. No, it says, it's just, and then it crosses out the E of nets and puts nuts. It puts a U in there.
It's not bad.
All right, so if the Jets were to trade the second pick in the draft, because if they keep it, they're out of their minds. But if they trade the second pick of the draft and they kept Darnold, what do you get? What's the sheet say for that bad boy?
Well, so much of it's going to depend on, like, these guys getting hot. Like, you guys remember, like, I guess the example that everybody would point back to would be 2012 when Robert Griffin, like, it just – he got hot and momentum built, and now all of a sudden you had a real market for that second overall pick, and they wound up getting three first rounders, I think, on top of the – or three first rounders and a second rounder. So I don't know if they'd be able to get that much, but there are enough teams sitting there in the top 10, and I'd have to look at the list. But, I mean, if Atlanta moves off of Matt Ryan, looks like Arthur Smith is going to be their coach. If the Lions move off of Matthew Stafford, I mean, I think Dan Campbell's got a good shot at that job. So,
we love Dan Campbell.
Right when his name came out of my mouth, I'm like, oh God, I know where we're going.
Him and Spielman over there in Detroit. Baby.
Dan Campbell. Elbow grease.
Come on. Can you imagine him and Chris Spielman being in, like, around the facility together?
I'll arm wrestle you.
I mean, just the jackassery that's going to come off of those two would really
be
something. The hijinks, all right. Two guys that take themselves very seriously.
Look outside the top three, right? If you look outside the top three, Atlanta, Philly, Detroit, Carolina, Denver, maybe. Like, you've got teams there where San Francisco's at 12. You got teams there that either have a needed quarterback or could look at it and say, like, if you're like Atlanta or Detroit, could look at it and say, we'd rather find a way to get a 22-year-old quarterback than go forward with our guy who's in his mid-30s. So there are a number of teams there in, like, the 4 to, like, 12 or so range where if Zach Wilson or Justin Fields were to separate themselves, you know, I think that you could have a real market for that second overall pick. But, again, that's going to sort of depend on how the process goes. And the process is going to be really weird this year because there's a decent chance the combine gets canceled or like just stripped way down. Pro days might not be the same as they normally are. So it's definitely going to be a different year from that perspective, and that could affect the value of the pick, too.
Bert, the way you're talking with all of these teams, and I agree with you, I would think a lot of these teams would move off their veterans because there are quarterbacks that a lot of people like. Are we looking at a situation where we're going to see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3 or 4 in the top 5, the way you're kind of painting this?
Well, Miami's sitting there. Miami's going to be interesting because, I mean, if you're the Dolphins, are you sold that Tua is the guy? I don't think I am.
You shouldn't be. No.
I don't think I am. I mean, I personally...
Well, I mean, I guess this, the players and the team don't think that he's the guy, according to
Miami Herald
reports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I don't know. Like I look at the situation, what it was this year, and, like, when have we seen before where a rookie quarterback drafted that high was being pulled for game at the end of games because the guy behind him, a veteran journeyman, like, was the better option?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. And I give Brian Flores a ton of credit for having the stomach to do that. And I think he scored a lot of points with guys in his locker room for doing those sorts of things because those guys don't care about Tua Tagovailoa's development. Those guys want to win, you know? And so I think he scored points for doing that. I give him credit for doing that because not many coaches would do it. I think it also shows you sort of where they stand, right? Mm-hmm. And again, like, I think that it's the same as like what I just explained with the Jets. I think the Dolphins have to go into this as if they don't have a quarterback, right?
Wow.
And I think they have to go into this and look at the quarterbacks, look at Justin Fields, look at Trey Lance, look at Zach Wilson, and compare those guys to Tua. Because if you're Flores and Chris Greer, you don't think you're going to be drafting this high again, right? So I think that there's like a ton of moving parts at the top of the draft where the Jets could take one, but they might not. The Dolphins could take one, but they might not. The Falcons could take one, but they may not. The Eagles could take one, but they may not. The Lions could take one, but they may not. There are so many cases like that where you don't necessarily have teams that are clear cut. They're definitely taking one outside of Jacksonville, but you have a lot of teams that might take one. And so I think that that's why, you know, again, the internal evaluations of guys like Tua, Stafford, Ryan, and Darnold are going to be so important, especially with new coaches in a lot of those places.
Okay, so you mentioned Miami, and there was that story that came out this week. You know, obviously, everything that's been going on with Houston right now has been nuts. And, I mean, just layer
let's
after
break.
Layer.
If we're going to move on to Houston, let's break, and we'll talk about that
one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's nuts what's happening there, and it might affect what happens here in the AFC East. So let's, we'll talk about that.
All right, that will be coming up. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more Touch Rich. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Honey, check it out, you got me mesmerized. With your black hair and your fat thighs.
At 8:05, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. And he joins us. Bert, we were talking briefly before the break about the situation in Houston, the situation with Deshaun Watson being upset with the Caserio signing as their GM. And the Jack Easterby, the former pastor guy for the Patriots, who is now somehow won his way either through the power of the Lord or through some other kind of tactic into a big position with Houston, apparently, seemingly,
Bert, what is going on in Houston right now in terms of the relationship with Easterby, the owner, and everything else?
Well, because Andre Johnson came out and ripped him by name. Like, that was, I think that was, there was a lot of kind of pussyfooting around, nobody really saying exactly what was going on. But when Andre Johnson came out and said, Jack Easterby is the problem, I was like, all right, well, the hammer is down now.
That was a direct shot at the owner, too. Like, if you read into that, like, he didn't name Cal McNair, but there was definitely, I'd have to pull the tweet up again, but that, there was definitely something directed at Cal McNair in there, too, which, I mean, look, like, I think that that's where we can point the finger as far as the overriding problem there. And I think most people in that organization over the last 3 years, for better or worse, like ever since the transition of power from Bob McNair to Cal McNair, have felt like they could take advantage of Cal. And I think that's why you've seen power struggle after power struggle, because, and you guys know this, when there's not strong leadership at the top, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to sort of reach for power over one another because they feel like they can take advantage of the situation. And so, sure. I mean, you know, whether it was Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith, Bill O'Brien eventually and Brian Gain, then Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien, then Jack Easterby and the search firm. You know, it's just power struggle after power struggle, and that all goes back to ownership. And it's so interesting too, because like what Bill Belichick tells all of his assistants before they're going to go get a shot at being a head coach or on the personnel side, before they're going to go get a shot at being a general manager somewhere, is be careful of where you go and know who the owner is, because it's the one thing you can't change. And right now, like, I don't know how the Texans get out of this without – I mean, did you guys watch the press conference?
No.
Mm-mm.
I mean, like, there is so much material for you guys there from Cal McNair alone.
Really?
Like, it is – I mean, like, I'm telling you, like, it's just – like, it, like, it's very
the Casario press conference?
Yeah.
Is it Cal? Okay, Casario, Mike, get on it. I want to hear this.
You go back and watch it, like, yeah. Nick bails him out a bunch.
Like, oh, really?
Jumps in when he's in like a yeah, I mean, it is. I mean,
he's like people's grandpa when they hit that age where the filter's just gone.
Or is he like Davis type? Is he like a Mark Davis type of owner? Is he an idiot?
I mean, I don't want to excite you too much, Fred. I mean,
Is there a competition for Wallach's mom's too?
Are you talking about, talking about new WNBA owner Mark Davis there?
Yes, that's indeed. Fun. Bags.
Yeah.
Yes.
So with all this going
Wallach's
on.
Wallach's mom.
Yes. The main thing I want to know is
tune in Tokyo.
Is Deshaun Watson going to be their quarterback at the beginning of next season? Because
I think
now,
so.
You do.
I don't think you can trade him, but I mean, look, like the main thing with Deshaun Watson wasn't that he wanted to pick the next head coach or that he wanted to pick the next general manager. Is that the owner involved him in it, like to begin with, and then pulled away in the end. And so he felt like he was lied to. He felt like he was patronized. And I can understand that, you know, because if you're going to tell a guy in October, November, you're going to be involved and we're going to consult with you and just, you know, finish out your season. But when the time comes, we're going to want your opinion on this stuff. And they never said that he was going to pick the head coach or the general manager, but we're going to want your opinion on this stuff. And then, you know, you go through the process and they bring in a search firm and Deshaun's part of that process and you see the candidates here and you tell Deshaun, like, we're going in a different direction. It's going to be a non-Patriot route. And then in like a 48-hour span, like, everything flips on its head. There's another expatriate guy coming in. Jack Easterby's back in power. And oh, by the way, like, the candidate that you had advocated for in Eric Bieniemy, because Patrick Mahomes had recommended him to you, they didn't even interview him. Like, how would you feel? You'd feel lied to? You feel like you're patronized? Like, it's just the mishandling of that, like, relationship. That's one of the most important relationships an owner has, is with his quarterback. We've seen it here, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, to screw up that, like, to just put that relationship in that sort of position, it's like malpractice by the owner.
I guess my health. I mean, it's, you know, just thinking about like a guy like Deshaun Watson, like what a waste. You know, what a waste, because this is going to be years until he's on a team. If they're going to keep him around and not trade him, you know, you're basically just going to have one of the best talents in the NFL sitting and playing for an organization that has done nothing but hinder his performance by trading away good players that were with him, hiring guys. I mean, listen, I don't know what Nick Caserio, what magic he's going to be able to pull, but this isn't something you fix in 1 year or maybe even 2 years.
Well, you're better off with the quarterback than you are without the quarterback. I feel bad for Deshaun
and all this.
That's part of the problem here was like that you went all in on Bill O'Brien and pulled the plug after a year.
Yeah.
And you see so many franchises do this, right? So they gave him the GM title a year ago. And I think Bill O'Brien's a good coach, but they gave him the GM title a year ago. And the whole idea was, okay, like it's on you now. So whatever we do, you're responsible for it. Got it. You know? But if you're going to go all in on somebody, there's going to be no checks and balances. Like you do that, and like look at all the moves they made. There were so many moves they made that were specific to what O'Brien wanted, you know, and how O'Brien wanted it to be, and the culture that O'Brien wanted it to. Like, if you're going to let a guy, if you're going to go all in on a guy like that, there have to be some level of checks and balances. So you're not letting a guy who might only be around for a year. Mm-hmm. Make like big box, like 5 year types of decisions, right? Like trading away first round picks, those are 5 year decisions,
right?
Like trading away DeAndre Hopkins, that's not a 1 year decision, that's like a 5 year decision. And so, yeah. On down the line, you see these big box decisions that were made because Bill O'Brien's whole thing was, I got to prove in a short period of time that my program and my culture works, and so I need to do everything that I can in that short period of time to do this. And without, he's doing those things without regard for the next 5 years of the franchise. And this is that, that's why you're in this position, because you had a guy making decisions with a very short term view on the way that things needed to be, that he needed to get it to where he needed to get it there really, really fast. And not only did it not work in the short term, you've created a much bigger problem for yourself in the long term.
Okay, so everything changes by the week, and we know this because with different head coaches, there's different decisions and people who like certain quarterbacks. You even mentioned the whole 49ers thing with Sam Darnold, which I find very interesting. Where does that leave the Patriots in their quest to find some sort of quarterback situation or solution? Have you heard anything about them being able to do anything to move up to get one of these guys in this draft? It doesn't seem like it. Who are you hearing? I mean, there's more and more talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick coming here.
Sure.
What are you hearing in this past week as far as the Patriots are concerned?
I think there's a good chance there are four quarterbacks going in the top 10. And like the hard thing about it, if you're the Patriots right now, again, there aren't like clear cut, like this team is taking a quarterback. I'm looking at the top 10 right now. I'd say two teams that I feel confident would go in on a quarterback right now or Jacksonville and Carolina. And then there are a handful of maybes. You know, like we said earlier, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Eagles, the Lions, the Falcons, like all those teams are sort of maybes. And so it could be that we have quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4. It could be that like three or four of those five teams that I just mentioned that are maybes don't take one, and now all of a sudden somebody's slipping. And so I just think it's an unusual year in that sense. It's a good year as far as quarterback prospects go. It's just the question is going to be how quickly they come off the board, and so much.
How far
of that's
up could they
determined.
Go? How far up could they trade? Like if they needed to, with what they have.
Because don't forget they got a lot of holes to fill. They need every draft pick they can lay their hands on.
I mean,
but
they
I'm thinking
get
like Mac Jones or a guy like
oof.
That.
They're Mac Jones ain't going to go in the first round.
If you guys want to look at, if
they're
you guys
saying he's
going to
go eighth.
Who?
I think it was like Pro Football Focus. Well, they think
the
Panthers
the
I think are going to
yeah.
try to reach.
Well, I mean, you, wait, so they have four quarterbacks going before eight.
I don't. I'll have to take a look at
gotta
what
be.
They've got. But they well, have Mac Jones at eight.
Because Mac Jones.
What do you think, Bert? What have you heard?
Yeah, he heard what I heard. He's a late first round pick.
I mean, also like with Mac Jones, wouldn't the way Tua's played kind of scare you a little bit?
Yes, that's the whole point.
I know.
Just because Tua looked awesome in that.
Well,
offense,
the
right?
advanced stats that they've have for those two guys are almost identical. Mac Jones throws either behind or horizontal the line of scrimmage more than anyone else in college football. The yak with his receivers is insane. And
they
have NFL caliber talent.
I don't know if I've ever seen a college receiver as good as Devontae Smith.
Yeah, like, of course. He's unreal. Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah, and so, and Tua's a better athlete. Hang on a second. And Tua's a better athlete and has a better arm than Mac Jones. So, I mean, of course you're not going to take Mac Jones. But go ahead, Bert, and just confirm that.
So, but I look at, like, the top 10. I mean, you asked how far up they could go, because that's the whole idea. And so I think Mac Jones is probably a step behind those top four. And we'll see. I mean, it's number one, and then the next three guys. And I think that there's a lot to sort out as far as which order those guys go in. I'd say right now it's probably Wilson versus Fields with Lance being the fourth guy. You asked how far up they could go. I mean, I guess the model for going way up from where the Patriots are would have been, you know, what the Rams and the Eagles did in 2016. And the Rams put together a massive package to go and get the number one pick from the Titans, I believe it was. And then you remember the Eagles traded up twice. They traded up, I believe it was first they traded up with the Titans, and then it was with the Browns, right? Like, so they traded up twice. So it's not impossible that you can get up that high. The part of the issue is if you were going to do that and you're the Patriots, like, the teams picking second and third probably aren't going to trade with you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because it's the Dolphins and the Jets. So right. I'd say the ceiling on how far up you could go might be the Falcons, and that would probably be contingent on what Terry Fontenot, who I expect to be their general manager, and Arthur Smith, who I expect to be their head coach, what they want to do with Matt Ryan, and whether or not they feel like they need to sit there at four and take a quarterback themselves.
Well, the reason I'm asking about Mac Jones is not because I'm an enormous fan of the guy. It's just, it seems like he would be the most realistic one that they would be able to get. If you're the Patriots, and you, for the reasons that you mentioned, there, you know, there could be some, you know, red flags. If you're the Patriots, though, and you desperately need some sort of quarterback solution, do you draft him?
I think you have to be... For me to draft a quarterback,
be careful. Don't say anything that you'll regret.
For me to be comfortable taking,
really sit on the fence,
a quarterback in the first round, Fred, I have to be comfortable he's going to go in the.
There's no way that you're taking him at 15.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't right now.
With the Patriots,
I think you have to feel comfortable that he is capable of being a top quarter of the league. So that'd be a top eight quarterback, I think, because I think like. Part of the issue with taking one high, like Andy Dalton, right? Andy Dalton was just fine, and he made the playoffs five times. And the problem with having somebody like Andy Dalton is that it puts a ceiling on you. And while you're good with a guy like that, it's sort of like being like the 45-win NBA team, you know? Like, you're probably not going to blow that position up and draft another one. If you draft Mac Jones 15th overall, you're probably not drafting another quarterback in the first round for the next 5 or 6 years. So that means whatever his ceiling is now becoming your ceiling at the position, because you're not going to address the position going forward if you take one in the first round. Whereas if you take, like, say you got Mac Jones in the second or third round, now we're talking about something different, because
because you're taking a shot at the cap, right?
Yeah,
you're taking a shot and you're seeing if this works.
And
it's better than what we have, and it's affordable. Yeah, because the book on Mac Jones is he could be fine if he has, if there's a great offensive line, if he has good weapons, if they can run a play action, if they have an effective running game. I mean, it's insane.
If you put talent on the field as good as the talent he had at Alabama this year, then you'll be fine.
And that can't exist in the NFL. I mean, they're professional athletes. I mean,
but then Fred, there's the Saban angle too. Whisperer going to say, hey, you know, Belichick, take this guy. You know, they're best buddies.
Possible.
You know,
hopefully Bill has learned his lesson. Well, if he takes Mac Jones, it's a major red flag
I mean, Mac Jones coming here would probably have it'd be a downgrade in offensive talent around him, right?
Of course.
Are you kidding? That's one of the best teams I've ever seen.
Maybe the offensive line can hold up, but Mac Jones had better skill position players.
No question, right?
I don't think Mac Jones threw a pass outside of the pocket this year, I was reading. Like, he just sat there.
He didn't have to, I know.
He could drift.
Pictures of him with his shirt off?
No.
Oh yeah, he Brady vibes. Very like you remember Brady when he took his picture at the combine.
But no, I'm it was worse than that, man. It was worse than that, don't you think? Like he was like me with my shirt
pudgy.
Off.
Yeah, right. He looks like the kid now. Who was afraid to take his shirt off at the pool for a while.
I like him.
Yeah, like he's the guy.
He's the everyman.
Yeah,
he's the dude who's in the pool with the dry fit shirt on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You can never tell that it's a fat kid. Unless you have a lot of skin tags.
He's not even fat. It's just like baby dough. It's just it's like there's not a hair on his chest, and it's just kind of doughy, you know?
It's like 80% of the male population at the University of Alabama, probably, right?
Like, yes, like, very right. He looks like one of them.
A lot of beer and barbecue and no body hair, right? You're just straight wasp.
I saw that picture and I was like, "Oh my! Like, how is a guy in like that program with the strength and conditioning and the training table and all that? Like, I just don't get like how. I mean, I would like to think that I would look better than that, and I'm not like a Division I athlete. If I had 4 years in that strength and conditioning program with the training table and all the different stuff, right?
I just tweeted out the photo. It made me root for the guy. Like when I saw the photo with his shirt off, I'm like, all right, well, here's a guy you can get by.
And then you take a picture of everyone else at Alabama with their shirts off and you go, oh, maybe that's how he did it. Oh, wow, Mac Jones. Yeah, he's got big old areolas. Big old areolas. All right,
side by side with Brady. He's way more.
I mean, it's worse
down.
Than Brady. No, it's totally
ten Brady times worse than Brady.
Brady was just like kind of scrawny.
Yeah, yeah. Or
it's like this guy is like looks like he's been kind of getting after. Like he looks like he's on like the wrong end of a 2 week bender.
He looks like he stopped playing football like 2 years ago. Is what he looks like.
Yeah. He looks like the Alabama quarterback who now works in finance.
Yeah, like he lifts. Like he lifts exactly. Like he's cold. He's Richard Todd. He's cold calling guys and making $10 million a year.
Okay.
He's making $10 million a year, $100 at a time. Yeah, he's a guy who like lifts, but not enough. All right, Bert, thank you so much for the time, sir. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right,
enjoy the games this weekend, even though they are very late in the day. And we'll be back in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.